motivation. So what is the motivation for looking for the search for a theory of mass gravity in general? Why we need it, right? So first of all, it is a fundamental question of field theory, whether it is possible to construct a consistent theory of mass gravity. Okay, that is interesting by itself. Plus, it provides, so a nice feature of mass gravity is that it admits self-accelerated solutions due to graviton mass. Okay, so that's another motivation for the theory. And it also provides a possible solution to the cosmological constant problem by screening large-scale sources such as vacuum energy, a mechanism called the gravitation. Okay, and it avoids the Weinberg's no-go theorem by not being general relativity. Okay. Okay. So history of the subject is as follows. So there exists a unique theory of massive spin to particles, which is free of Gauss and tachyons at the linear level, and it goes under the name of Hirst-Pauli theory. However, this theory exhibits so-called BdBz discontinuity, and it cannot possibly describe our universe, because the helicity zero mode of the massive graviton couples to the trace of the matter-energy momentum tensor with the same strength as the helicity 2 does. Thus, it gives us the order of one deviation from the results of linearized general relativity. But it was realized by Weinstein in 72 that the nonlinearities that are present in general relativity, they could screen the contribution of the helicity zero mode within solar system scales to any observable quantities. Okay? And hence, if this mechanism is at work, which is called Weinstein's mechanism, at observable, at interesting distances, that is within solar system distances, we will recover general relativity. But it was shown by Bulwar and Desert that the same nonlinearities that are responsible for the recovery of general relativity, they introduce the sixth ghost-like degree of freedom. That theory is unacceptable since it is unstable. Okay? This seemed to be like dead end, and after this, there has not been much progress in this direction. I mean, to develop the consistent, I mean, there was no proposal for the consistent theory of massive gravity that worked. But situation changed after the appearance of the DGP model. DGP model is interesting in the context of massive gravity because the bending mode of the brain, I mean, well, DGP, in so-called decoupling limit, in some limit, it reduces to the theory of helicity 2, of like degrees of freedom of gravity, plus there is a scalar degree of freedom, extra scalar degree of freedom, which in principle could give rise to this VdVz discontinuity, okay? But interestingly, this DGP model exhibits Weinstein's mechanism, and hence it is compatible with observations, okay, at solar system distances. But it is different from the massive gravity in the sense that these nonlinearities, they don't give rise to the Gauss degrees of freedom. They don't introduce extra degrees of freedom because of the specific structure of self-interaction terms. Okay, so these terms being of the Galilean type, and they are free of ghosts. Okay, but even after this, the consistent theory could not be proposed up until very recently. So this theory is the most general theory of massive gravity, nonlinear level that one could write, which propagates only 5 degrees of freedom. Okay, so this theory does not have ghost-like degrees of freedom in it. On Minkowski background, and it is if alpha 3 and alpha 4 are two free parameters. Okay, so the first term is Einstein-Hilbert term, and it is supplemented with the mass and the potential self-interaction terms of the graviton. Okay, so these potential terms are determined in this way, where K matrix is given by this expression over here. So G mu nu is a metric tensor, and phi's are 4 scalar fields that are introduced to restore manifest covariance in the theory. Okay, so they play the roles of the Stueckelberg fields. And eta AB is the 4x4 matrix of Minkowski signature. Okay, so the square brackets here denote the trace of the matrix that appear inside. Okay, and I want to like emphasize the significance of these coefficients that appear here. They may seem to be random, but if one writes anything that is different from these combinations of these quantities, one will necessarily introduce 6 degrees of freedom in the theory, okay? And unitary gauges, let me just mention, we'll come to that. Unitary gauge is determined by setting pi a equal to xa. Okay? On this slide, these coefficients may seem really, really random, but if we rewrite in a slightly different way, they look much nicer. Okay? So those terms can be written this way. So they are just various contractions of K matrices with the epsilon tensor. Okay? So epsilon tensor is determined as a tensor, so it's not normalized on one, it is normalized on the square root from the determinant of the metric. Okay? This structure also suggests that this polynomial terms, okay, it should be finite. So there are just finite number of structures that we can write here because there are no other non-trivial contractions of k's with epsilons. Okay? Any other combination we could write would be some powers of these guys, but they are not allowed because of the reasons we will come to that. They will necessarily introduce Gauss degrees of freedom in the theory. Okay. So let's move on the derivation of the theory, how we arrive, right? I mean, obviously we need some strong motivation why we should write such a complicated mathematical structures, right? So let's consider for simplicity the massive spin one theory first. And obviously the first thing that strikes our mind is that it is not gauge invariant, right? The mass term, it breaks gauge invariance that is present in Maxwell's theory, right? So naively one could think that the theory propagates like 4 degrees of freedom because AES consists of 4 fields. But I mean, we immediately realized that A0 is non-dynamical, and one could do actually careful Hamiltonian analysis and show that there are only 3 propagating degrees of freedom in the theory. But in this talk, we will not follow this Hamiltonian formalism, and we will just take the easy approach, that is, we use Stueckelberg trick in the Lagrangian formulation, right? And the Stueckelberg trick for massive spin one goes as follows. We decompose A mu, which is Proca field, and which does not have any gauge freedom, in a vector and scalar in this way, okay? As a result, the theory becomes manifestly covariant, because now if I make the gauge transformation of A mu, little a mu, and I supplement it with the appropriate shift of pi, okay, basically with the same phase, this combination remains invariant, okay, it doesn't change. Hence, if I replace capital A mu in the Lagrangian by this combination, the theory will be manifestly gauge invariant, okay? And in order to identify, I mean, what are the different helicities and how they propagate, okay, we can take the so-called decoupling limit that corresponds to the limit when mass goes to zero. And physically, it corresponds to taking the energies in the physical processes to be much larger than the mass of the graviton. As a result, the Lagrangian splits in 2 sectors, completely decoupled from each other. First sector is Maxwell's term, and it shows that there is this A mu, which propagates only 2 degrees of freedom because of gauge invariance and Lorentz symmetry. And there is decoupled scalar degree of freedom, which just propagates freely. And this is the longitudinal mode of the photon, OK? OK, so how can we use this Stueckelberg trick in massive gravity? This is the question. There was a proposition of this. So it was basically invented by Al-Kanihamed, Georgiy, and Schwartz, the Stueckelberg trick for the massive graviton, OK? And it simplifies the analysis of the Boulvard-Desler ghost that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk a lot. Okay, construction, I mean, by considering the decoupling limit, which is similar to the massive photon case, but it differs in details, by taking M Planck to infinity, mass of the graviton to go to zero, and fixing the cutoff of the theory to be fixed, okay? The extra Gauss-like degree of freedom manifests itself in the dynamics of the longitudinal mode of the graviton, okay? So let's give just examples. So what kind of dynamics are not acceptable in the theory of massive gravity, and what kind of interactions are, okay? So for example, if in the decoupling limit, one would get this kind of Lagrangian for the pion, okay? And then if we derive the equations of motions, we would see that there are more than 2-time derivatives acting on pi, and hence the Cauchy problem is ill-defined, and which means that there are more propagating degrees of freedom than one, okay, in this Lagrangian. Even though on the Minkowski background, that is on pi equals to zero background, this ghost is harmless because it has infinite mass, okay, so it's impossible to excite it. On any reasonable background, it will become sufficiently light to be, I mean, to invalidate this theory. Okay? For example, if I would consider the local clamp of matter and study the dynamics of pion field around this source, we would see that ghost is extremely light and it spoils everything. Okay? So what kind of so this raises questions that if these kind of terms are unacceptable, and this is exactly what appears if we supplement GR with just poor Fields Pauli mass term. So what are the acceptable interaction terms for the longitudinal mode? The acceptable longitudinal modes are the ones that appear in DGP model, the so-called Galilean interactions. No, no, exactly. I was saying that, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm saying that if I write GR, nonlinear GR, and I write Fields Pauli mass term, like if I just write the quadratic mass term for the graviton, that introduces ghost. But you are absolutely right. If I'm in a linear regime, my Lagrangian is quadratic only, then there are no problems. But it exhibits, so the point is that it's not yeah, exactly. Because it has VDVZ, so we need that these nonlinearities to be introduced. You are absolutely right. Okay, so the acceptable Lagrangian is given by this. So even though one could naively think that it has too many derivatives, if you write down the equations of motion, because of the miraculous cancellations among different terms, there are only two derivatives per field, and hence it propagates only on any background. It propagates only 1 degree of freedom. Okay, so we would like to construct massive gravity, which at nonlinear level reduces to this kind of dynamic, this kind of Lagrangian for pion, all right? And yes. Actually, it was. Say it again.
So, naively, this looks like it could be Reiser Hamiltonian, which is a cubic chance in the
picture. Yes, but in this case, they are. Okay. So the Hamiltonian, I think it was shown that this Hamiltonian is bounded from below. I mean, I'm not sure about only if I could consider poorly this term, but a whole construction that I'm talking about, the massive gravity that we think is ghost-free, it was shown to be bound, I mean, it's a positive semi-definite Hamiltonian. Okay. But I'm not sure about this particular.
So,
can you
see how the time derivative gets
cancelled? Yeah, high time derivative that gets cancelled.
Right. How are
they
cancelled between these two terms?
No, this particular term is such that in equation of motion, so all these high time derivatives, they are total derivatives, basically. Okay, and in equation of motion, they cancel.
So it's not the first term that matters, it's just a particular form.
Yes, like here, right? First term was healthy, right?
Right.
But the whole problem was coming from this guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just a particular contraction that.
Yes. So if I write the indices carefully here, it's just basically a kinetic term, d mu pi squared times box pi. Okay. So usually when we talk about gravity, so we have two.
That's not true. There are two constructions there, right? This is schematic for two different terms.
No, in Lagrangian you have one term for Galileo.
You have d mu pi.
But you can move things around and so on. Even if you write just once.
Terms, you can move two different lines. But there is d mu pi, d mu pi, d mu d mu.
Yeah.
And then
no, I think they are all reducible. Okay, if I just write this, okay, d mu pi squared.
This is you're right.
Cubic. But there are particles, there are particles and quintic.
You can reduce them to each other on equation motion.
Okay. So when we talk about gravity, we have to characterize the metric degrees of freedom somehow, right? So we usually take metric and decompose it as Minkowski metric plus deviation from this metric, right? So h in mu. But this formulation, the mass gravity that we would construct out of this decomposition, let's say we write Einstein-Hilbert term and then some mass terms for h in mu, it will the theory is not going to be manifestly gauge invariant, okay? So basically, this h in mu will play the role of the Proca field of the electrodynamics, right? So the gauge invariance can be restored by introducing four scalar fields, phis, that I already mentioned in previous slides, okay? So if one decomposes g mu nu in this way, this guy is a tensor, and capital H mu nu, we also consider to be a tensor, that keeps g mu nu to be a tensor. So that's a legitimate covariant decomposition of the metric. And then the simplest theory for the massive gravity that one could write, manifestly covariant theory, would be Einstein-Hilbert term plus this quadratic term in capital H mu nu. And hence, capital H mu nu is a tensor, it is manifestly covariant. Right? So this theory admits the following Minkowski background. So it's just Minkowski background, and pi a's are given by just basically x's. Okay? And it is natural to define the pion fields, the extra helicities, helicity 1 and helicity 0 modes, as a deviation from this background. So we decompose pi a as this, and then we can further split pi a in a vector and a scalar degree of freedom. And if we take the decoupling limit in the theory, we would arrive to this kind of self-interaction terms that we mentioned that they are bad. Okay? So how can we get rid of this? So we have to somehow remove these kind of interactions. And since it is cubic, it is natural to assume that if you write higher polynomials, like capital H cubed, for example, they would involve terms like this. And maybe we would be able to cancel the badly behaved terms. Okay? So one could write cubic terms. And surprisingly, in the decoupling limit, it is possible to select the C1, C2, and C3. So if one selects these coefficients, the box pi cube term cancels. However, the Cauchy problem remains ill-defined in quartic order, and that means that it requires addition of higher and higher order terms. Like basically, we have to add a quartic term in H mu nu and so on. And this procedure can be continued to all orders, and one can write down the theory, which does not have high derivative terms to any orders. Okay. Yes. Yes. So basically, when I just wrote quadratic Lagrangian, I got problem in cubic order. Now I can write cubic order that fixes this cubic term, which fixes the cubic order problem, but it does not fix the quartic problem. Okay. So the theory there will be box pi to the 4, for example. Okay. That means that I have to add something else that cancels box pi to the 4 term. Okay. And once I get rid of box pi to the 4 terms, there are some terms that are like in higher powers of pi fields, okay, which are still which have ill-defined Cauchy problem, and I have to take care of them somehow. That means that I have to add more and more terms in the series. Okay.
Sometimes it's worse than
non-renormalizable. Well, I mean, this theory actually, the UV completion of the theory is unclear. Yeah, I agree, but as we will see, I mean. This is a legitimate theory. Okay, it has some cutoff, and as long as we are below this cutoff, things are well defined. Okay. For example, let's go.
But it's a little more robust than that, right? Like in any given source, it can definitely determine what order you take into account terms, because then it goes to
heavy. Yeah, I mean, in GR, we also have infinite number of terms. It becomes strongly coupled with Planck, but. I mean, that's a problem of uniform completion. Okay. Proceed.
But is it true that eventually this entire series will sum to
it will be sum, yes. Yeah, so I just started with the result, and now I'm kind of explaining how people arrive to this result, okay? And because this analysis that we are talking about is not full, because even though we are getting rid of the problem in the decoupling limit, it may appear in full theory, but I will comment on that. But it doesn't. Okay. So if one goes on and keeps tuning these coefficients to arbitrary orders, and then looks at the Lagrangian, okay, let's say we tune the coefficient to all orders and we take the decoupling limit. In the decoupling limit, the scalar tensor part reduces to this. Okay, there are finite number of terms. Okay. These x's are functions of pi and q that are determined by these epsilon contractions. Okay, so we have linearized Einstein-Hilbert term, and we have h mu times these functions of pi. The theory, so and because of these epsilon structures, these x mu nu's are automatically conserved. Okay, that tells us that theory possesses linear diffeomorphism, linear gauge transformation. So if we perform linear transformation of h mu nu, it keeps Lagrangian unchanged. And there is also a Galileo symmetry because of the high derivative nature, okay, of the interaction terms. So where does this Galileo term come into the business? So we see that pion, right? So the quadratic term that involves pion is h mu nu times two derivatives of pion. So pion doesn't have its own on its own kinetic term. So in order to diagonalize the kinetic term, we have to perform the conformal shift. And as a result, this quadratic term, so h mu nu times this quadratic function of x mu nu, will give rise to the Galileon type interactions. Okay? So basically, if we have diagonalized kinetic term, then the interaction terms are pretty much like Galileon. Plus, of course, some high order interaction terms with h mu nu. Okay? And as I mentioned, the Lagrangian preserves Galilean transformations, the symmetry, Galilean symmetry. I'm not writing here the vector scalar part, and I'll give you schematically how it looks, but because basically it involves infinite number of terms, and I don't want to overwhelm the slide. Okay. So the requirement of the absence of the ghost in the decoupling limit is so powerful that the whole infinite series can be resummed in this. Okay. Basically, it's exactly the same slide that I showed on basically one of the first slides. But I mean, it's written in terms of the capital H mu nu. Okay, it's just trivial redefinition. And the unitary gauge is given by setting H mu nu equals to little h mu nu. Okay, and as a result, we will get Einstein-Hilbert term plus some polynomial in little h mu nu, which is not going to be manifestly gauge invariant, because little h mu nu represents the Proca field. Okay. Actually, I'm now, so far I'm describing the theory, okay, but it was proven, not by me, actually. People, yeah, that's good that you remind me. So, the full Hamiltonian analysis of the theory has been done, and it was shown that, so in ATM formalism, right, we have shift laps and metric degrees of freedom, which have some kinetic terms, right? So in GR, NJ and N are Lagrange multipliers, okay, and that's exactly what gives us the right number of degrees of freedom. In here, NJ is not Lagrange multiplier, okay, and it is just it has non-dynamical equations of motion, and it can be solved as a function of other dynamical degrees of freedom. However, N is a little bit tricky because it appears that naively it appears that it's not a Lagrange multiplier, but we need Lagrange multiplier in order to get rid of the post degree of freedom 6. But that was the problem of Hulbert and Desert, because they observed that n enters nonlinearly, so it would not impose the constraint on degrees of freedom, and the ghost would propagate. But it was shown that in appropriate, if one rewrites the Hamiltonian in appropriate variables, then n becomes Lagrange multiplier and imposes Hamiltonian constraint, and time conservation of the Hamiltonian constraint gives us the secondary constraint, which doesn't involve these non-dynamical fields. And the time conservation of the secondary constraint defines laps. Okay? So these constraint systems, the usual Hamiltonian analysis of the degrees of freedom. Basically, we have Hamiltonian constraint, a secondary constraint, and that removes ghost-like degrees of freedom. Okay? So we need two constraints in Hamiltonian formalism to get rid of one degree of freedom. Right?
So this is somehow selecting a
third time slice. Yeah, ideal formalism, exactly. So we take unitary.
I would usually say in ideal formalism, it looks like in usual GR, it looks like you're choosing something special, but you know you can choose anything and it's all equivalent, since it's secretly equivalent to the covariant.
Okay.
But here it sounds like you're telling me that's actually not true, because these things are, you're actually solving for lots of shift. I'm not allowed to choose them.
Shift is not Lagrange multiplier anymore, because we need more degrees of freedom in massive gravity than in GR, right? If both NJ and N would be Lagrange multipliers, right? Then we would go back to the number of degrees of freedom that we have in GR, and that's not what we want. So NJ, they shouldn't be Lagrange multipliers, they are not. They are just can be solved as a function of dynamical degrees of freedom. But laps, I mean, the theory should be contracted in such a way that laps propagates the constraint. So it constrains metric degrees of freedom.
I think you just repeated what you just said, which I can see, right. But I don't. That it sounds like you're constructing a theory, which right. The normal reason that you can choose that is because I can choose any kind of time slicing I want.
Okay.
Right. But you're telling me I'm now solving these as a function of fields.
No. In unitary gauge, I have physical metric. Metric is physical, right? It's like Proca field, right? Right. Sir?
I hope so.
Yeah, right. So then I'm just decomposing it, okay? In the formalism that is similar to IDM. So I'm just separating 0-0 component, 0i component and ij components appropriately. And I'm just studying the dynamics in the Hamiltonian. Okay? So in this format, in unitary gauge, I don't have any gauge freedom. So I'm just decomposing my theory.
I think it's different than the following. You're talking about one particular constraint that in traditional BI, when Bohr does the curve freedom analysis, it seems like this would not be, you cannot just integrate it out.
In Bohr desert, the problem was that Nj was could be expressed as a function of other degrees of freedom, but N laps was entering Hamiltonian nonlinear waves.
Right, so it's not clearly a constraint.
It was not constraint. Yeah,
right.
Said.
No.
But in here, yes.
This one.
Okay.
Now, here it sounded like you're saying that there is a special choice to make so that it is clearly a constraint.
Special choice or what?
Of the field.
No, it's basically you naively, okay, let's say you write down the Hamiltonian. Naively, it may enter like 1 over n, for example. That means that if we would expand this 1 over n around n equals to 1, right? Then it would enter nonlinearly, right? Because that's what we usually do. The bottom line is that n may enter naively nonlinearly, okay, in the Hamiltonian. But by performing the invertible redefinition of Nj, okay? Let's say we come up with some new shift variables that are determined by the old shift variables, okay? In invertible way. We are allowed to that, okay? Because the physics doesn't change if you make invertible transformations of variables. After performing this change of variables, then N appears as a Lagrange multiplier.
Right, so that's what you want to understand is, given this trick,
yes.
Is this trick imposed a certain coordinate system on your entire system, or is it just a clever way of
just clever way of writing down things?
So Bloomberg does the best put it down 30 years ago, they just didn't notice it.
Yeah. So the thing is that when you write down the equations of motion, it may naively seem that there are more dynamical degrees of freedom than they are. So right thing to do is to basically analyze the Hessian, because one naively may think that we have, let's say, I don't know, four dynamical degrees of freedom, because we have four equations and there are time derivatives everywhere. But if the Hessian vanishes, then that means that some degrees of freedom are not propagating. They don't have kinetic terms. We can talk
later. Yeah, I'll come back to this at the end.
Okay. So now we take this theory and we try to analyze, to find the black hole-like solutions. Okay. And then let me repeat one more time. So it is a two-parameter family. Alpha 3 and alpha 4 can be any real numbers. Okay. So let's recall what is the Weinstein mechanism. We have Weinstein mechanism because in order to recover the results of general relativity at small distances, right? Let's say within solar scale distances, right? That means that if we want to have black hole solution, we want at near the horizon, because this is like, okay, near the horizon, we want the black hole to be similar to the one that we have in GR, right? Okay, so naively, for example, one could think that, let's say, when we go close to the horizon, why don't we take, as a solution, something like a black hole in static slicing, like Schwarzschild black hole, okay? So let's ask the question. Can the unitary gauge metric be given near the horizon by this expression, where F is like just RG over R or M square R square for the sitter, okay? So can this possibly be a good black hole configuration in massive gravity if this is the solution in the unitary gauge, okay? The answer to this question is no, okay? Because as we said, in unitary gauge, so metric is a Proca field, so any singularity that it exhibits, it is a physical singularity. In GR, we could just perform the coordinate transformation of, right, coordinate transformation and get rid of the singularity, right? I mean, metric and inverse metric. But in GR, if we make any coordinate transformation, we necessarily introduce the Stueckelberg fields, okay? In other words, in massive gravity, besides those known GR invariants, there exists a new invariant, which is composed of G mu nu, some contraction of G mu nu, and the derivatives of the Stueckelberg fields, okay? Which is gauge invariant. And hence, any singularity that resides in this gauge invariant quantity is a physical singularity, and we will never gonna hide from it, okay?
So what you're saying is that in GR, the criteria is not really whether G mu nu has a rather than as a curvature arm.
Yes.
Invariant.
Invariant, yes.
There's another invariant here.
Yes, exactly.
Or said another way, the coordinate transformation is compatible with the gauge you're choosing.
No, in fact, I mean, it depends. When I'm saying the unitary gauge, I mean the unitary gauge, I'm always specifying the gauge, right?
Yeah.
In some particular coordinates. Okay? So, what I'm saying is that in these coordinates, I have singularity, it's going to be there no matter what coordinates are.
Choose a different set of coordinates R, but it would involve violating the gauge condition you've chosen.
Right? Even if you didn't choose a gauge here, you'll have a similarity, and there's no gauge transformation you can make.
I was asking, we will come to
gauge transformations of subtype.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we can make the gauge transformation. From this metric, let's say we start from this metric, we can make gauge transformations and we can bring this metric to any known form that we know in GR. But the singularities will be there in Schnuppelberg fields. But I will tell you how we should take our solution to behave. I mean, what kind of solution we should take in order to not to have singularities. Okay. So this is just let me move a slide, maybe it becomes clearer. So what are the right? So what is the way out of this? Okay. So what kind of solution we should expect in unitary gauge in order not to have singularities? And obviously, if one take some coordinate, let's say in unitary gauge, one finds a Kruskal form metric for the black hole, or Eddington's form, or Paleeve form. So in our work, we concentrated on this form, which is bootstrap Paleeve form, and it is non-singular form, right? Because it corresponds to, in GR, these coordinates correspond to the frame of the enfolding observer, and this observer does not see any singularity on the horizon, okay? So in unitary gauge, we have metric given by this form, okay, and unitary gauge is fixed by this, then there are no physical singularities because this gauge invariant that I mentioned is non-singular, okay? Miraculously, if one takes this nonlinear theory of massive gravity, one can find the solution of exactly that form, okay? So this is the Schwarzschild-De Sitter solution. It's a solution to the free space equation, source-free equation of motion. That is of the Paleeve form, and it does not possess any singularities on the horizon, okay? So the only singularity is at the center of the black hole. So this is the metric in the unitary gauge, when phi A is equal to xA. And it looks exactly like the solution of general relativity in what would add some cosmological constant of order of mass of the graviton, okay? So this is the exact solution to those equations of motions, the equations of motions that follow from the Lagrangian I wrote, okay? Now, to address these questions about coordinates, one can make, since this is like exactly like of the form of the general relativity, one can make the well-known coordinate transformations, and we can rewrite this metric in static slicing, okay? So there exists a coordinate where metric looks exactly like Schwarzschild-like, but in this case, phi a's are not equal to x a's anymore, and there are some Schnuckelberg fields around. But whether there are Schnuckelberg fields or not, observer cannot see that, because if you take the minimal coupling to the gravity of, if you couple matter minimally to the gravity, geodesic equations are exactly like the ones of general relativity. Okay? The only thing that appears is the connection, and connection can only fill the metric. Okay? So this is like legitimate Schwarzschild-De Sitter solution to the theory of massive gravity. Okay? However, it has a couple of limitations. One limitation being that this solution is found in the subclass of the theories that I was talking about. Originally, it was a two-parameter family, and this solution is found in the one-parameter subfamily of these theories. This alpha is related to this alpha 3 and alpha 4 coefficients that I wrote on the previous slides. However, there is a stronger limitation to this solution, and that is the problem with fluctuations. Okay, so if I would write down the decoupling limit Lagrangian of the full theory.
So just to be clear, in that parameterization, your Schnuckelberg all have singularities in them.
No, in this case, no, because originally, in the unitary gauge, I found a solution that is free of singularities.
Yes.
Right? That means that the invariant is not singular. Oh, wait, you are right, actually. Well, but now I make singular coordinate transformations, and when you go here, yeah, exactly. Shukalov will be singular. Absolutely.
Because RG is free, right?
RG is integration constant, and this is just mass of the
graph. R sub G is free.
R sub G is, yes, it's an integration constant, like in GR.
Right, so you have just as you mod three parameters. What's the problem that we just mentioned?
There are
too many free parameters?
No, this is just integration constant of like black hole. Like,
right. I mean, right. It was the same thing in, you know, you know, in GR, you have the same thing. You're sticking into spherical symmetry, so essentially you're getting what you always get. Basically.
You were talking about the free parameters and the theory starts with. The theory starts with in front of the perfect, the different terms. Yeah, so
there are two free parameters. So there are two free parameters. No matter what are their values, the theory is goes free. Okay,
right.
This is the same.
So alpha will change.
Now this one here, it depends only on one some special combination of these two parameters. Hence, the solution is found only in the subclass of the theory. So it's not found in general. Okay. So if we take the decoupling limit of this full theory, nonlinear theory, the Lagrangian schematically looks like this. First two terms, they are exactly the terms that I wrote previously. So it's like tensor, and so kinetic term of the tensor, and tensor scalar interaction terms. Okay, there is also kinetic mixing, which you could diagonalize. However, the vector scalar part is a little bit more tricky, because there is this kinetic term for the vector degree of freedom, but there are infinite number of interaction terms between A and pi. Okay. And it's just schematic. The theory is such that it possesses, as we said, linear gauge transformations for H mu nu, Galilean symmetry, and it also possesses the U1 symmetry for the vector mode. Okay, so A always propagates 1 degree of freedom, 2 degrees of freedom because of the gauge invariance. This guy manifestly respects it, and this guy is the contractions are such that it is U1 invariant. This Lagrangian is so-called decoupling limit, which corresponds to taking M Planck goes to infinity, mass of the graviton goes to zero, and the cutoff of the theory is lambda that is given by lambda cube equals to M Planck M square. We take this fixed. Okay, so we are at energies which are very high, much larger than mass of the graviton. So much lower than M Planck, but we are somewhere near lambda, but we have not reached it yet. Slightly below lambda. It's similar one that one takes in non-abelian massive spin one particles when we fix the web of the Higgs to be finite in the decoupling limit. And then, okay, yeah. Yes, so it just corresponds to high energy limit, but not too high. Okay, it's just below the cutoff. So now if we would identify the degrees, I mean, the background, the parts of the backgrounds correctly and take the decoupling limit for our background and study the perturbations around it in this theory, that is decoupling limit theory, we would observe that the kinetic terms of the vector and scalar, they vanish, okay? So what this could mean, okay? This could mean that in the decoupling limit, this could mean that the theory is, the background is infinitely strongly coupled, right? Unless the nonlinear terms arrange themselves in some special way such that we can just literally integrate out these degrees of freedom. They just become non-dynamical to all orders in perturbation theory. But we haven't studied it yet. It's work in progress, okay? But there can be another thing that could save the day, and that is, if one considers the perturbations in the full theory, right? Because there are some bunch of terms that we dropped in the decoupling limit. So in the decoupling limit, kinetic terms vanish on the background for the fluctuations, but the nonlinear terms that we did not took into account could reintroduce kinetic terms, and this is also a work in progress, and I don't have answer to that for today, okay? So this is another limitation on our background, that in the decoupling limit, the kinetic terms disappear. So as I said, that can mean that the background is infinitely strongly coupled, which is not good. Or this helicity 1 and helicity 0 just become non-dynamical. And they can be integrated out, which is also interesting. Okay. Because of these limitations, we would like to think about the solutions not as just fully legitimate black hole solutions on the de Sitter, but as just representative of the larger class solutions with better behaved fluctuations. Okay. So what I wanted to outline is that the solution, the minimal requirement for the solution is to be the singularity free on the horizon. So there should not be physical singularities on the horizon. Otherwise, it is unacceptable as a black hole configuration. Okay. All right. And let me just finally conclude this talk by giving another solution, which is a charged black hole solution on the de Sitter space. This is also an exact solution to this theory, okay, coupled to electrodynamics. And this solution looks exactly like Paleeve solution, like charged black hole in Paleeve coordinates, which can be rotated in the static slicing. And one could get just this background. Okay. All right. Another thing that I wanted to mention is that these Paleeve coordinates, they cover only half of the Penrose diagram. For example, for the black hole, it only covers half. And but so it doesn't cover, that doesn't cover the white hole solution, but it does cover the black hole. Okay. There are some recent interesting works related to this field, but let me just move to the concluding remarks. So the conclusions are the following. So there is a strong theoretical evidence that the consistent theory of massive gravity exists. Consistent meaning that it propagates only 5 degrees of freedom, exactly the number of degrees of freedom that are dictated by the representation theory of the Poincaré group. And the proof has been done in the decoupling limit, and Hamiltonian constraint was shown to exist by Hassan and Rosen from Stockholm. Okay. So there are some interesting mathematical structures that appear in the theory. And I did not talk about this, but let me just report that there exist, in the decoupling limit, there exist self-accelerated solutions that also provide this mechanism of degravitation. Okay, so if one would include cosmological constant, the decoupling limit, there are solutions in the decoupling limit that degravitate this cosmological constant inserted by hand. Okay, so no matter how large is the cosmological constant that we wrote by hand, we could, in principle, find the solution that is just Minkowski space. And the way this happens is that the condensate of the pion fields compensates the contribution of the cosmological constant. Okay, because gravity is also sourced by the Stueckelberg fields, like pions, and it is sourced with cosmological constant. So no matter, I mean, if you write some cosmological constant, we can find this configuration for pion fields that exactly cancel the sourcing of the cosmological constant of the gravity. Okay. And as I showed, there exist some exact solutions with horizons that are free of physical singularities, okay, except at the center of the black hole. But the dynamics of the fluctuations, they require further investigation, and we are on it. And, I hope to have some progress in this direction soon.
In regard to the black hole, suppose you take two different, very different limits. One of them is when the wavelengths of the graviton is much, much larger than the potential violence size.
Okay.
And the other is when it's much, much smaller than that. Wouldn't you expect to see two very quantitatively different behaviors?
As compared to?
So in those two cases, does your solution interpret between those two cases where the vector horizon is much larger, so the wavelengths of the graviton as compared to the...
So it's basically the metric is exactly like in GR, okay? So are you asking about the fluctuations of the extra degrees of freedom, or?
So I mean, aside from that, all the integration constant.
Yes. So it, yeah.
So you consider two very different limits. One is when the integration constant, the mass, is much much larger than the mass of the graviton, and the other one is much much smaller.
Oh, the mass of the graviton. Okay.
Yeah. So in respect, the dots of the scene should not be. Did you guys look at that?
No, but I, okay, let me think. So then if I take this RG to be very large, and, okay. But this solution would remain to be the solution, I mean, it's normally. So. You are asking about if I take just heavy source, right?
Do you see the Schwarzschild representation?
Yeah. It just depends where is the Schwarzschild horizon, right? So you are interested in the situation when the...
No, but you see, suppose M is much, much larger, right? Then
this
don't
one?
You switch signs in the opposite way?
You mean this one is large, right?
Right. Don't you
switch signs? Compared to that depends, I mean, which size of the horizon, which one is large, because the size of the horizon for the sitter is given by inverse M, and the size of the horizon...
So in the normal case, your metric switches sign as you go through the singularity, right?
The horizon.
The horizon.
Yes.
But here, it seems like it'll be the opposite, right? Because your R is in the numerator.
I mean, that's
the same.
Whatever L squared to be N squared or alpha, it's nonsense. You'd have exactly this.
Oh, you're right, sorry, that doesn't matter. You just solve the problem.
Yeah.
So presumably the solution holds in both cases.
Yeah.
So in the early days, I think this capital K has a geometrical kind of like the single curvature.
Yeah, like in DGP, for example, that's what you get, right? The four-dimensional GR is modified by the extensive curvature term. Here, you could think about it, but I don't know if you can really interpret it. We thought about thinking about this graviton mass as coming from some extra-dimensional mechanism, but we could not construct a consistent theory.
Kind of like a structure, but it's solid like the norm vector.
Exactly. So if you just look at degrees of freedom, it's exactly like what you get in extra-dimensional models. Like in DGP, you have sensor modes, as we said, vector and scalar. But direct connection is unclear. The interaction set terms are different. In like DGP, for example, we have resonances. Here, we don't. So if this can be embedded somehow in extra dimensions, and we can think about this pion as a bending mode of the brain, then it should be something very peculiar, some peculiar construction. We tried to do that, so we tried to take some extra-dimensional model in which, and compact extra-dimensions, where you have the scalar-supplying modes, right? And we tried to take some consistent limit in this model of different parameters, okay, the size of the extra-dimensions and so on, such that in this limit you reduce to the mass of gravity. But we got halfway through. Because the extra degrees of freedom, even though they became very heavy, they became infinitely strongly coupled as well. So, as for today, there doesn't exist a consistent construction. However, there is a so-called auxiliary extra-dimensional construction. I have a paper about that. If one introduces extra label for U, introduces extra dimensions without giving to the graviton the extra components, the extra dynamics in extra dimensions. Okay. Then one can recover the theory of massive gravity, Gossian theory of massive gravity, with appropriate boundary conditions. But it's not something non-physical. It doesn't come from some real, good old extra-dimensional model.
So this small M here is the graviton. So if I really
do
perturbation on the
graviton,
that's the mass for the graviton.
Yes, only because, so that's how we write. So we write this GR, as we say, right? we have a general relativity, right, R. Plus we write, let's say, unitary gauge. We write Pauli field master, right, m squared h mu nu squared minus h squared, right? So it's basically the master.
On the other hand, I'm trying to use that to explain in the cosmic solution that the Hubble would be the m squared over r.
M squared over?
The Hubble scale will not just depend on, will not just depend on m squared, but also depend on this r. Because I mean, if I look at the
So when I was saying that it's determined by 1 over m, I was assuming that alpha is of order 1. Yeah, of course, yeah. Because this is exactly the Hubble is 2, Hubble squared is 2 over 3 alpha n squared. Yeah. Absolutely. So it depends on these three parameters.
So it's just, it sort of feels like you have more freedoms compared to polyphia.
Yes. Because power in Pauli
fields, yes,
in linear order, right, Pauli fields is a linear theory. So we don't have any free parameters. The only parameter is mass. Here, we construct a nonlinear theory where we have freedom. We can choose freely two real quantities.
Yes?
We worked on this, we're going for the decoupling a little bit. We still had cubic terms of this pi variable. Is that, I'm not supposed to think of that as a dynamical field, or?
Pi, which
yeah.
Case?
Think about your,
yeah.
This one? Okay.
So that's got, I thought you said I could, is it consistent to set the vector field to zero or no?
Yes, so this is the decoupling in Lagrangian, and there is a solution where a is equal to zero,
okay,
because
so
that's quadratical.
So
yes.
Let's,
yeah.
First of all, let's look at that. So you've got a term which is gonna be cubic in pi there.
Yes.
The highest terms are first power in pi.
Well, okay, but he's got a 1 to 3 there.
So no, it's 1 to 3. The other terms are
h mixes with pi, the lowest order.
Okay, so h is stuck in there too.
Right.
Okay, so it's just an illusion. Okay.
But there are no other terms. There are just three terms.
Can you just clarify one last point? So for the full Lagrangian, not for this expansion.
Yeah.
But for the full Lagrangian, which one? This is still in the decoupling, right?
No, this is the full theory.
You know that this is the full theory?
So this is the full theory?
Okay.
Yes. And yeah, in fact it was resummed in this K, so infinite series that we wrote in capital H, it was resummed in this combination. Okay. There can be a different resummation, okay? You could resum the same series in many different ways, but this is this is the most general one. So whatever you write, it's also going to have two free parameters, and it would be the expansion would be identical to this. Because you cannot write down anything besides this. If you do so, then you introduce 6 degree of freedom.
And you said that earlier, just to make sure. So this full theory has been proven to be Hamiltonian.
Yes, Hamiltonian. So it was shown to be positive.
By the way.
So the fact that it was positive semi-definite was done by Poisson. But Poisson from Czech Republic, and the existence of the Hamiltonian constraint in full nonlinear theory, as well as the secondary constraint that gets rid of this Bouvard de Ghost, was done by Hassan and Rosen very recently. First, they had a paper which showed only Hamiltonian constraint, and they just argued that there would exist secondary constraint as well. But like month ago, I think they explicitly showed that there is a secondary.
Okay, well, that's not speaker again.